The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Had a nice day today. We have a lot on tap for you this evening. First up, we're going to our nation's capital, hopefully soon to be restored to legitimacy as a capital and not run by a bunch of Marxist communist flunkies, and talk to attorney Jonathan Emore. Jonathan, as you well know, is a patriot hero attorney standing behind the United States Constitution and our right, all of our right, to choose the path of health and wellness we'd like to in these troubled times. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome back, and Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Well, Merry Christmas to you too, Jeff. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. There are a lot of things happening, and it's not going to slacken. We have to get to the inauguration. We don't know what the so-called opposition has planned, but I have a very strong suspicion it's not going to be pretty. They've been too quiet. I think they're gathering a lot of people. They're going to try to wreck the inauguration and swearing in, certainly flood D.C. with operatives, shall we call them, and snowflakes and idiots. Oh, no, not the snowflakes. They won't go there. Too much stress. I forgot. Anyway, it's going to be difficult.
It is. It's really cause for concern because a lot of these suggestions by Michael Moore and others who have been urging protests are more on the order of violence than in anarchy than they are a legitimate expression of disagreement through protest. So I would anticipate that there's going to be some sort of an attempt to have violent protests akin to what happened at the Democratic National Convention in 68, I think it was.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
And I think they'll fail, but there'll be attempts at doing that. I expect that there'll be a very large presence of uniformed military as well as police. And I think the president will be very well protected, but that's still that's the biggest concern I have, is that adequate measures be taken to more than adequate measures be taken.
Indeed.
To protect,
yeah,
Donald Trump, because I really do believe that the environment out there is so hostile that some of these people will or individuals will use it as an excuse for violence. I'm not as concerned about terrorist acts, although that may happen, as I am about extreme liberal groups like Black Lives Matter and
Yes, with unlimited
disaffected people.
Unlimited funding from people like George Soros, who
right.
could hire any number of people with weapons and disperse them through the crowds, cause a lot of horror. This could be really ugly, and it's a shame that the military will obviously have to be called out to keep the peace and keep order at a presidential inauguration. But the schism in this country is showing no signs of healing. It is being, in fact, promulgated by the very people who caused it. The mainstream media is not retreating. They're continually pounding virtually everything. And I share your concern. I don't know what's going to happen. We know of three attempts to assassinate Donald Trump. That's what we know about. There may be several others in the planning stages now, or the staging stages now. I don't know. We don't know. But we do know that these people, as you just mentioned, are capable of damn near anything.
Well, with the incident today with Ivanka Trump, any appearance by Trump family members in public is a
big risk.
Definite risk.
Yeah.
And the degree of security they need is going to be probably greater than any other president and his family in our history.
Agreed.
It's amazing how far people are willing to go and think they can get away with it in our environment. The sad reality is that this extreme tolerance for liberal dissent, even violence, compared to total intolerance of any conservative communication of a viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
extends not only throughout college campuses, but is really fueling a lot of these horrific acts, the shooting of police, the assault and battery of people accused of being Trump supporters, the fake displays of anti-Semitic and racist slogans that have been identified as hoaxes.
These are all false flag operations, basically.
Yeah, all of it is designed to incite, to make people angry, and to encourage them to take mm-hmm. action. The paying of people during the campaign to commit violent acts at Trump rallies. And it's just it's amazing how far people are willing to go. These are the very same people who oftentimes were the first to condemn as violent and sexist and racist mere words communicated by conservatives. And yet, when it comes to the conduct of these people, you don't see much media coverage and condemnation of these acts by the mainstream media. And you have all of this grousing about that there must be something wrong or endemic in the police forces of this country that would justify or would give some reason for murder, and it's of police. Mm-hmm. It's just repulsive. It's really an extraordinarily sad state of affairs that we confront. But it's the interesting thing is I strongly suspect that if we're able to implement the Trump agenda within the first 100 days, get this massive legislative reform package through Congress, within a year, we're going to see, I suspect, strong effects of that that are positive, and in increasing the number of jobs, increasing the GDP, expanding new market sectors, creating more competition in existing markets. All of it is going to be profoundly beneficial.
Yeah, a major renaissance in the vitality and the overall way of American life. It's going to come back. Now, even if that happens, I don't particularly expect the mainstream media to give it its just credit. In the media world, I think they're going to sit on it.
I think they will, but I think the reality of it will strike in local communities all across the country. I think what's going to happen in the cities is going to be interesting too, because there's going to be a major push to encourage domestic manufacturers to increase the economic opportunities in the cities. And I think over the course of the Trump years, if he stays with this and if he's able to get the package through and able to defend it, the upshot of it is going to be quite a bit of an economic renaissance, as you mentioned. But also, I think a lot of this protest movement will die down, lose fuel, because a lot of people will feel comfortable and will be employed.
There's no substitute for the proof's in the pudding. And if things are better, a lot of these marginal activists are going to retire. I agree.
And I think a lot of these people are unemployed. I think a lot of these people have nothing better to do. And I think if they finally get into the market and earn a living and see what it's all about, they'll realize the foolishness of camping out with a sign and some angry
words.
It's
going to take time, as you say, though. This will not happen quickly. And it will really turn on the Trump administration and his leadership. He's the head coach performing and getting these things done against, we might add, if I may speak for you, the most incredibly troubled country that has ever been handed off to an incoming president. We are in grievous condition across the board. And yet already the president-elect, who's not in office yet, has performed so well and inspired such confidence that my second headline story on the homepage is U.S. economic confidence soars to highest in history. He's not even in office yet, and look what's happening. So this all augurs extremely well for our future. If we have to drag these people kicking and screaming to reality that, yes, you are better off than you were 4, 8, 16, 12 years ago, we'll do it. But everything you say is correct, and I'm encouraged, but it's going to take time.
It will, but I think you're going to see in the first 100 days, we will see a legislative agenda, a conservative legislative agenda, that is more extensive, more profound, and far-reaching than at any other time in American history. It's really quite remarkable what Donald Trump has planned. And I think the interesting thing about Donald Trump is that he is so tough and so adamant and so strong-willed that I believe he'll cause all of this to come to pass. I think any dissenters in Republican ranks are going to quickly find that the political disadvantages of being in dissent vastly outweigh.
Yeah.
And I think they'll all line up and these things will come to pass. And I think the they're so powerful. I mean, when you dramatically reduce the corporate income tax, when you reduce individual taxes by these amounts, and when you take such strong steps to protect the borders and encourage domestic manufacturers, the effect of those types of things, which are quite extraordinary, is profound, and the impact will be very close to immediate. When they nix Obamacare and substitute health savings accounts and tax deductions for medical for health insurance, those effects of empowering individuals, giving them suddenly freedom of choice to choose from any number of plans they wish to have, and the marketplace that they'll create, particularly by breaking down the interstate barriers to competition and health insurance, all of those things are going to have huge impacts. And it'll take a little while, as you point out, but I think that some of these things will be felt very quickly. And opportunity, the whole emphasis on opportunity, will shift attention away from the dismal Obama years to this new vibrant
dismal
era.
You're being polite. Disastrous Obama years. Hey, Donald Trump is going to empower, and this is what the people on the other side of the split don't get. He's going to empower Americans to a degree that they have not felt or been empowered for a long, long time. And that, I think, is at the bottom of what you're trying to suggest here in a broader sense. When people feel that their destiny is, again, to a significant degree, in their hands, it has been restored to them, they're going to respond, I think, very appropriately and very strongly. And I concur.
Yeah, I do think that if this does come to pass, that it's likely to be very, very successful. And I think he is probably going to be there for 8 years. If at the end of the four-year period we have prosperity, it'll be very difficult for the Democrats to defeat Donald Trump, in no small measure because he's a very formidable opponent,
right,
in that he can't be they can't pigeonhole him, and they can't predict what he'll do. He is really a figure that they have no understanding of how to deal with him. That's part of the problem, that they have an enormous amount of their angst is generated from the fact that they simply cannot believe that he became president and he outsmarted them in his strategy.
Exactly,
and of course, that's Kellyanne Conway's handiwork in no small measure in positioning that whole campaign. But they now are spinning and they're in trouble because they can't identify how best to reform their party so as to avoid a loss in 4 years. And the internecine struggle for control over the Democratic Party is very interesting. Right now, the very forces that were responsible for the defeat are in charge and continuing to hold the reins of power. And the only competition to them is so far left, beyond even them. They're quite liberal themselves, but the only competition is so far left that they're out of touch, completely out of touch. And while they may be able to capture the cities and be able to capture a minority vote, they're not able to keep together the essential blue-collar element that is necessary for taking presidency through the Electoral College. And this whole business about trying to get rid of the Electoral College is hilarious. It's patently absurd and contradictory. Of course, during the campaign, when they assumed they would win, maybe the only chance that would be possible for Donald Trump was somehow to get enough Electoral College votes, which they thought impossible. And so they said that any challenge to the results of the election and confirmation by the Electoral College would be outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
That it should never happen. Of course, then they're in the position of doing that very thing. I find it supremely ironic that after all of their efforts, they were able to peel away one notorious Republican elector, yet in the process, they lost five of their own.
Very amusing. Very amusing. The idea of trying to incite a revolt among the electors to go against not only tradition, but the will of the majority of the people here was so contrived and obvious that I did tend to laugh at it. And yet I was concerned at one point that this might spread among enough people to make some noise, but they certainly didn't come in. They didn't even get in the door. Trump loses one, Clinton loses five. Wow.
And I think the whole approach, first the attempt to get recounts when there was no basis for a recount,
right,
the enormous cost of that, then this approach of going after the Electoral College, all of this really stems from the Clintons. The Clintons are really reprehensible people.
Oh, yeah.
They cannot accept that they made a mistake. They refuse to accept that anything they did was in error. And so rather than accept blame and responsibility, they project blame to other people. They first look at, you know, Comey or others they blame for
all
their
reverse projection
loss.
Every bit of it.
But in the process, they develop they consistently go back to how do we gain power. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the limits of the law. They really don't care about anything other than grasping at that source of power. Because, look, if they had won the White House, then the opportunity for cashing in would have been immense.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes,
the Clinton Foundation situation with Hillary as Secretary of State would have been magnified enormously if Hillary had been president. They would have had those opportunities to abuse position in order to feather their own nests. Now, the real kick comes in because they're out of power and they have no influence. And that's where they can't turn that into capital. I mean, one of the least popular speakers on the corporate ticket on Wall Street is going to be Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. Why would anyone on Wall Street right now pay $200,000 to hear Bill Clinton say anything or Hillary Clinton?
Oh,
so the days of cashing in on their public positions is over. And that's the biggest thing, I think, that must frustrate them enormously. They have amassed an absolute fortune based on their abuse of power. And they're selling, essentially, privilege to people who are interested in gaining access to one
right
thing or another.
Right.
That has been their business. And they've done that successfully since Bill was in the White House. And the loss of that is just something that mortifies them because it's a whole they became intoxicated with a lifestyle and a popularity or celebrity that is vanquished by this defeat. They were international characters. They were Hollywood favorites. They were able to have 98%, 94% of their foundation money kept within the foundation. Chelsea was $10 million, amassed $10 million from the foundation. So they had tens of millions of dollars, and they had a lifestyle where they were of value to people. People wanted to interact with them. They were celebrities. Now all of that is dashed, and so they end up without any cachet to cash in on. They don't have can't do the lecture circuit. They can't curry favor internationally. They have sympathy in Hollywood, but they're not the popular favorites. They no longer have that gleam of stardom and
the smug arrogance.
So I think that's what, you know, that's the thing that absolutely drives them bonkers. And then to top it off, it's because the person they thought least likely to ever be able to win, their favored candidate to run against, defeated them.
No, it's really fun. We've got to take a break here, but you are so right. For the Clintons, power was an aphrodisiac and then some. I think I liken them to drug addicts, and power was their cocaine, and you name it. They can't tolerate the fact that it's all gone. And I do think the Clintons are, in all likelihood, billionaires now. Offshore, hidden money. $7 billion was donated to the Clinton Foundation for relief efforts in Haiti. Most of that money vanished. And so I think that they're probably far more better off than most people think. But it is quite a spectacle indeed. Stand by. We'll be right back with Jonathan as we continue. Okay, let's get right back to our conversation with Jonathan Emord. As you aptly pointed out, had the Clintons reinfested the White House with Bill, remember, to be named to oversee and lead the American economic recovery, imagine the raping and prostitution and selling out of this country's heart and soul by those two people. It would have made, as you alluded to, the Clinton Foundation look like a lemonade stand for them. My God, just think about it. It's enough to make you sick.
So we'll see. We'll see whether Barack Obama pardons Hillary Clinton. But if he does not, and I suspect that he may not, then when he leaves office, I think there may be a different tune coming out of the administration on the Clinton Foundation, because the investigation's ongoing. The evidence will be put before Jeff Sessions, and Jeff Sessions is not a person who I think will ignore the presence of illegality or excuse it based on some political concern. I think he's going to see that equal justice under law is the appropriate approach, and they'll have to account. Now, I don't know. Of course, Donald Trump has said that he's not interested in that. But I believe that it's important, in part, for him to say that to minimize the risk that Obama will pardon her. So that
I understand where you're going with that.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah. I'm going to leave her alone.
Probable.
I'm going to let her heal. She suffered enough. Obama might not pardon her. And then, what's already underway, as we've discussed in past programs, 4 investigations in the Congress now, Jeff Sessions coming into DOJ, maybe James Comey will develop a sudden backbone and do something appropriate. I don't know, but you're right. This is all very interesting.
It is. It's a new day. I find fascinating the appointments. I think you couldn't ask for better people in these positions. James Mattis, I don't think you could get a better person to put in to head the Department of Defense right now than James Mattis. He is a Marine's Marine, and he's a person who has gone from the ranks of a junior officer in combat all the way through to positions of leadership over the command of the military. And I think he's without question, as Trump said, he's kind of a modern day George Patton.
That's remarkable thing to even mention in the same paragraph, and I see why he said it. I understand that. What a compliment.
His statements that he's made, General Mattis has made, are remarkably similar to the kinds of things that General Patton said. He's a fearless warrior. He is definitely a patriot, and he's dedicated his life to understanding strategy, and he's a high level sophisticate when it comes to military history and strategy. I do think he knows the Middle East perhaps better than anyone at that level, and that he appreciates well the different techniques that are necessary to defeat radical Islamic terrorism, and I believe he will be a great Secretary of Defense, and I think we're going to see some enormous changes in the conduct of war.
Add this in, one of the ways to defeat radical Islamic terrorism is not to fund it.
Right.
Which is what this country has been doing.
Our whole foreign policy and our whole relationship with the military has been a basket case under the Obama administration. The military is hamstrung such that they can't effectively fight the war on terror, and such that those who are in the military and are in harm's way are so limited in the terms of engagement they frequently are at much greater risk than is justified by any stretch of the imagination. We're not in it to win with this administration at all. And so having someone who's puts America's interests first and who is intent on defeating and eradicating terror and using every means possible to achieve that end will signal an enormous change. And we're going to see that rather quickly. And I think we're also going to see the relationship between the United States and its principal enemies, China, Russia, and Iran, change very, very rapidly. The areas in which the president has near exclusive domain in foreign affairs will allow Trump to very quickly establish himself, that he will be tested as every new president is. But they'll find out quickly that he's a person who means what he says, that he will not be cowed into a position of inferiority, and he will not be intimidated. And I think this is part of the reason why just today the Egyptians withdrew their proposal before the United Nations to condemn Israel for settlements on the West Bank. Obama and Kerry were positioned to abstain from voting. The United States, as one of the members of the Security Council, can veto these measures and has historically done so in defense of Israel.
Right.
But this administration signaled that it would abstain to allow the vote to go to the floor, which would then result in a condemnation of Israel for its settlements on the West Bank. And this would have been a first, principally because the United States did not come to the defense of Israel. But Trump, not even in the White House, picked up the phone, assured Netanyahu that his administration would not take such a position, and then went one step farther and showed his merit, you know, the power of his persuasion when he picked up the phone, called the president of Egypt, and caused him to withdraw the proposal.
That's a
It's a different world.
Yeah.
It's a different world. It's a person. This is a person who is proving himself to be enormously appreciative of this great country. And the problem with Obama is that you never got the sense, since the start of his apology tour, that he believed in the United States as necessarily an exceptional nation, as a country that really should remain a superpower. Instead, he wanted to diminish our strength, diminish our influence, and allow other countries to dictate to the United States how we conduct our affairs, even to the extent of altering domestic policy to accommodate demands made by foreign powers.
Exactly.
In that sense, he was more of an agent for foreign countries than he was a president of the United States. And all of that is about to end very abruptly on January the 20th.
He mocked America. He mocked our history. He mocked our way of life. He mocked our entire ethos as a republic. The man was out to deconstruct this country from the beginning. And he did a hell of a lot of damage. I think you're also going to see the sanctions, the idiocy of sanctions against Russia, go away very quickly. And I would just sum this up by asking all of you listening, have you ever seen a president-elect who has already accomplished so many things? I mean, this is, to me, unprecedented, Jonathan.
It is. It would have been enough had he selected the people who he has for his cabinet. This is a stellar cabinet. These are people who will outperform in spades the mission that Trump has given each of them, because that's the kind of people these people are. So we're going to see enormous strides in deregulation, in opening up markets and expanding domestic energy production, in achieving energy independence, and in breaking down barriers to international trade and to rebuilding the American economy and expanding the gross domestic product. He's going to make the nation be transformed fundamentally. And it's because, again, you know, viscerally, Donald Trump loves the United States. He's an American. He is a true American. Barack Obama had a chip on his shoulder. He really felt as though the United States had a lot to apologize for. Therefore, he went around the world apologizing. He did not believe in this country. He didn't believe in this country as a nation that deserved to be great. He viewed it as a country that had a lot to owe to others and needed to make amends and needed to accept responsibility, even for those things that it did not do, in order to accommodate or appease our enemies. He believed that our enemies had legitimacy, so he embraced Iran, the biggest hater of this country, a nation that is dedicated to our destruction, and has, since the hostage crisis, committed itself to murdering Americans, to engaging and supplying weapon systems and funding to those who are engaged in terror, who is the greatest state sponsor of terror in the world. He embraced this country, and then he conceded to them in every possible imaginable way, not only financially giving them...
Plane loads of cash.
Plane loads of cash, billions of dollars liberated from frozen assets they had here, and enabling them to become a superpower throughout the region, and then having no role to play whatsoever other than a vacuous line in the sand, with Russia and Iran having a pivotal role in this taking of Aleppo by the Syrian regime. But the whole thing is changing dramatically, with Trump destroying the relationship Obama created with Iran and establishing a new order, which will be that Iran will understand the might and power of this country and will appreciate that it's going to go back into a box. I mean, essentially, Iran's days of domination of the whole region are at an end. And pretty soon, I suspect that Iran will be spending a lot of the money that it has been given by the Obama administration to simply defend itself, because I don't believe it's too far down the road before Israel will find it to its advantage to strike Iran in order to prevent Iran from fully facilitating its nuclear weapons program. And I don't think any Arab country will come to the aid of Iran, because they're as hated by their neighbors as they are by Israel. And I do think that Trump won't stand in the way. I think Trump will give them the green light they've been looking for.
Well, that's quite a scenario. We will have to see. Let me bring you back and get your take on something that has really bothered me. And that's the fact that we have a Muslim as president, and we also have, apparently, a Muslim as director of Central Intelligence. It is said by people who know that Brennan became a Muslim, adopted Islam, while he was the station chief in Saudi Arabia. Now, if that's true, two of the most powerful people in America, maybe the two most powerful, are Muslim in their orientation. And extrapolating from that, could you see the two of them working together? They're said to be very close, by the way, in many ways behind the scenes to further denigrate America and degrade it to the extent that this attempt to flip the Electoral College and other things that we don't even know about. In other words, was there a coup mentality between these two Muslims of great power and influence?
Well, I don't think there's enough evidence to support that. I do think, Obama professes that he's a Christian. I don't know what his actual religious affiliation is. I don't know what Brennan's affiliation is. I do know this about Obama, though. I do know that he harbors great sympathy for the regimes that hate us, like Iran, and that he has... based on his own upbringing, because his father was a Muslim and from Africa,
yeah.
And he has strong affinity for that part of the world. He has an understanding of it and appreciation for it. But I think where he crosses the line is that his sympathy for those who hate us is leading him to do such things as embrace Iran, as apologize for America to that part of the world, and as to restrain our use of force against our enemies in that part of the world, and abandon American leadership in instances where it's indispensable to achieve our mission. So he's really ended up becoming a servant of the very people that are our enemies, and he's done it thinking, at least, that that's a better way for the country to go. Now, what I can't decide is whether that's predicated on a extraordinarily naive conception of the world and what would be in the best interest of the United States in the future, some sort of liberal conception that if you embrace your enemy will learn to love you even as he's stabbing you, or whether it is based on a real desire to take us down a few notches and to allow this festering of opposition and violence against the country, because he's unwilling to allow us to function as a superpower. So I'm not sure exactly where, you know, whether it's designed to humble America. I'm gonna humble America because even though we're a superpower, we shouldn't be. That's sort of a guilt trip type of reaction, which is outrageous. Or whether it is because his sympathies for our enemies are so profound that he thinks, if I embrace my enemy, even as my enemy is trying to kill me, I may someday achieve peace, some sort of a confused, mixed-up liberal conception of the planet. I'm not sure which of those is predominant.
Well, when you mentioned, Jonathan, embrace our enemies, how about importing them? The immigration issue.
Right. Sure.
My God, what has he done? He has brought in hundreds of thousands of people whose sworn religious ideology is to destroy us.
I agree. He's recklessly, grossly negligent in his defense of America's interests, and that's a very good example of it. Anyway, it's coming to an end. I mean, we hope over the next 28 days he doesn't do something so horrible that it'll cause a major incident to happen in this country, a terrorist incident. But he is in short order trying to do a number of things that are ruinous to the economy. He's recently, his efforts on the environmental side to expand, to cut off offshore drilling, and to expand the hasten the imposition of hundreds of billions of dollars of regulation out of the EPA onto American enterprise before he leaves. All of that is just spiteful, really. It's he knows it's going to be reversed when Trump comes in, but he's putting it in place, even though it's for a short period of time. The only possible effect of it is to punish parties economically, to force them to expend money to abide by regulations that may be short-lived, and just waste private capital. I mean, just
right. I'm also concerned about in the time remaining that he has an inordinate amount of American military power deployed in Europe. He just sent 1,500 tanks to Denmark. 1,500 tanks. These are heavy M1A1 Abrams battle tanks. They're going to the Russian border. And I hope that he doesn't try to ignite something before he leaves office over there. I don't trust the guy
at all. This is all, again, sort of a part of his mental dereliction. This is all springing out of his mistaken view that the Russians hacked into the American election and
ludicrous.
And influenced the outcome of the election. Now, there's no question that ever since the 1930s, the Russians and others have tried to influence American domestic politics, and there's no question that the Russians use agents to try to intercept information and may have gotten information from the DNC and others during this election cycle. But there's no proof, none, zero, that there has been any effect of fake news stories or other efforts by Russians that has actually resulted in the in an influence on the election. In fact, the most publicized thing was not the individual fake news stories that are in question, but which are odd and don't really give any clear direction to somebody to vote one way or the other. But the more profound thing is the condemnation of Russian interference with American elections that was part of the Clinton campaign. You heard more from the mainstream media and from Clinton herself in the final 2 weeks of the campaign about Russian influence. So if anything, that line about Russian influence, influencing Trump and the Republicans and benefiting them, would likely have had an effect on someone's vote, if at all, rather than the other. So there's no evidence whatsoever that anybody changed their vote one iota. A single vote was switched based on some fake news story or some Russian hacking event.
Right. The future of America's mainstream media has been, I think, dealt a serious and deserved blow. I think the so-called alternative media now has gained a lot of prestige, which it deserves. And I think you're seeing a major shift. Well, last comment. What is your impression of Donald Trump deciding, if he were to decide, not to hold regular White House news conferences and press briefings, and instead talk and continue to talk to the American people through the social media? I think that's a masterstroke.
I think it's great. The media will constantly be able to perform its function as a sincere critic or truth seeker, regardless of the way in which Donald Trump communicates. Press conferences are showboat affairs anyway.
Yep.
And the questions asked rarely have much of an effect upon the course of events. So I don't think it matters how he does it. I think for him, it'll matter as long as he can maintain that direct communication via his tweets and public appearances with the American people. That'll be good.
These are really unprecedented times. Jonathan, thank you so much for what you've contributed during this last year and before that. And I will look forward to talking to you in 2017.
Yes. Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Jonathan. Same to you and yours. All right. Take care. Good night. All right. Attorney Jonathan Emord, very articulate, brilliant man, and we will be right back with hour number two for you after this.